Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time once again for the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Here's your hosts, Alan and Robin Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan here. Robin's taking a little break, and Brian Eiler is on the line with us from Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife and Heritage Service. Brian, what's your title? You just got another step up the ladder. What's your title now?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am now technically the game mammal section leader, so I'm supervising the deer, bear, and fur bearer programs, but still very heavily involved.
Yep. Sure, I know you are. Our other guest, Harry, he's also taken a step up the ladder, Harry Spiker. I can't say his title, but, you know, we got to see, we didn't get to see you in Western Maryland. I think you were out west at that time, but we got to see Harry and Paul and Karina and a bunch of the folks when we were up in Garrett County on August 20th. So that was
I missed that. I was hiking in Glacier.
I know. Always some low-level excuse for missing an event, right?
No, I'm sorry. Next year.
Next year.
Unless we're hiking somewhere else.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about the bear skull issue about picked up bear skulls, and I don't know if I sent you maybe you saw it online. We have a new state record black bear.
You told me about it, yeah.
Yeah. The pictures were on our Facebook page. Yes, indeed. So, and that was a picked up skull. So we have a new giant black bear in the books. That's for sure.
Yeah, we have some nice bears running around the west.
There's no question. Now, I just learned something yesterday that I didn't know, that farmers can have someone come in on their crop damage permits or bear management permits anytime. To harvest a bear on their permit from September 1st to the December 31st? Is that
correct?
True?
That was a tweak. Yeah, we've had that bear agricultural damage permit for a number of years.
Yes.
In the past, it was only viable during the season.
Right.
So if a farmer experienced bear damage, you know, whether it was to corn or, you know, or another agricultural crop,
right,
they could apply to get a permit for one bear. You know, it was only for one bear.
Right.
And they had to use it during the season or you know, and it worked the same way. They could name sub-permittees. They could also harvest. So it functions exactly like the in-season hunting permit, basically.
Right.
So we tweaked that because it was hard for farmers that were experiencing damage in September to have to wait until the end of October. So we tweaked it to make it where they can select a two-week window from September 1st to the end of December for one bear. You know, it's only for one bear on that property.
Yep.
Instead of having to wait until the end of October to the actual bear season, they can go ahead and use that permit before that if they wanted to.
Got it.
It's not a large number of bears that are taken under those permits.
Right.
And so far this year, we've had a mix. We've had hunters that have selected after the season, we've had farmers that have selected after the season, farmers that have selected before the season. We maybe given a half dozen total.
I know.
Is a change for this year.
Yeah, I have a person that contacted me who's actually bear hunting today. And sent me pictures of the damage to the, like a drone picture of the crops, you know, where the bears have gotten in the corn and just raked it in.
It's amazing. Acres. They literally can destroy acres of corn, you know.
No question. Yeah. So,
and we have a very healthy bear population.
No question.
And what we're doing is really no different than what other states, you know, authorize as well.
So. Yep, no question about that. But the main question today is EHD.
Yep, that's the big, the hot button topic.
Uh-huh. So we're just getting more and more and more. With social media, of course, more and more, you know, people sharing their pictures off their trail cameras, emaciated deer, dead deer. You know, this disease strikes, about what time of the year does it start, Brian? Early August?
Yeah, typically we start getting reports in early to mid-August. And,
right.
You know, and then it'll run through the first frost, typically kills, you know, the it's a virus that's spread by gnats or no-see-ums, midges.
Right.
And so, you know, until you get the first frost, it kills those gnats off. You know, you can have this virus on the landscape. But, yeah, and then when the farmers get out and start picking their fields, you know, whether it's beans or corn,
yeah,
and that'll ramp up the calls a little bit too, because they'll start discovering some of these deer that are, you know, that are in their bean fields or their corn fields that they
right.
weren't aware
right.
of prior to that.
Isn't right. It? Yeah, I got it. Well, the thing that I've told the listeners here earlier on is that you know, they'll go to water because their fever is so high. They'll try to find right. relief in the water or near the water, and they do stop eating because of the lesions in their on their tongue and in their roof of their mouth, the ulcers and so forth that the fever and the disease causes. And I think that's part of the reason why they call it blue tongue, isn't it?
Right. That's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly.
Because
right.
the so, tongues tend to swell.
Yeah. And the tongues swell and get that bluer, bluish color to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a little bit. I'll tell you what. We've got a caller on the line. We've got Tim in Queenstown. He has a question about EHD. Maybe we ought to go to Tim, and maybe you can answer his question better than you can answer mine.
Sure, I can try.
Sure. All right, Aaron, let's put Tim up there. Good morning, Tim.
Morning. How you doing?
Good morning. You got a question for Brian?
Yes. Well, first I was going to tell you that we got trail cameras, too, and back in August, a while back, we was getting some really nice deer, like, you know, end of July around there. And all of a sudden, nothing. I hadn't got a picture of a good deer in a month or more.
Right.
Nothing. One small four-pointer running around here. And that's, you know, a couple small does and fawns. And they have totally disappeared. I mean, we're going to go down through the woods this morning and see if we can find any, but it don't look good, I can tell you, not for here.
And you're so, near Queenstown?
Near Queenstown. So my question is there any way you can control them midges or whatever they are? I mean, they control everything else with spray. Is there anything they can do to stop them?
No, you know, it would be nice if there would be a way to control them, but, you know, they're so widespread. And they're typically, you know, in wooded environments. So I don't know how you would ever could have, you know, effectively try to control them with a pesticide.
Yeah,
I'm not aware of that ever being tried in any, you know, in any states or anything, unfortunately. This is just something we deal with, you know. It's cyclic. We don't deal with it every year. It moves around from different parts of the, you know, to different parts of the state from year to year, and we've actually had it since the 1970s in
right.
Maryland. You know, we worked with the Southeastern Cooperative Wildlife Disease Study starting back in the 1970s. We still work with them today, you know, on this virus. So, but no, I don't think there's any reasonable way you could try to control the midges. We have had a couple suspected reports from Queenstown, but that not as many as the lower shore this year. So not saying that it's not EHD on your property, but it, you know, it could be something else, you know, that has just altered deer movements. But if you do, you know, when you said you're going to go down and walk through your woods, definitely let us know. Or, you know, call your local DNR office, whether that's in Millington or whatever, if you do find any, and let us know, because we monitor for this disease, and we, you know, every year we keep track of what counties we're seeing these suspected deer in.
Yeah, that'd be no problem. If we find some, I'll, you know, let you know. But
yeah, do that, and you know, let us know here on the show as well, because I hunt Queenstown.
Yeah, I heard you say that.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think I'm far from you. You know, I really don't. No, I think you're near. Where are you? I think I know where you hunt, and I'm not going to say it, but, you know, let's just put a pin in 213 and 301 or put a pin in 213 and 309 and draw a 5-mile radius, and I think you're probably within there somewhere, as am I.
Yeah, you probably are really close. I mean, it's not that big of an area. I mean,
right, you know, right.
So it's a shame. I tell you, it's a shame we had some really nice deer over here. Get some really nice pictures, and they all disappeared.
Nothing. And that's what we're hearing statewide. Oh, well, Eastern Shorewide, we're hearing it.
The farmer picked a cornfield over here a few weeks ago for solids, and my buddy was out there picking corn up that he had knocked down.
Yeah.
And found a couple laying in the field dead.
Yeah.
And it died. So we're getting ready to go down through the woods because they just think that they're sleeping. But
they're back. I mean, you know. Well, let's see if it turns around for you, Tim. You know, they don't have the capacity to recover, you know, in the same season, but in a couple of years we'll have them back without any more spread. So
we found, like, lost some real nice deer off the pictures and
yep.
End up finding like 10 or 12 of them down in the woods.
Yep.
And they were all big deer. I mean, I can't understand why. It just seems like it affects the bigger ones.
Maybe you can answer that, Brian. Well, we're seeing a lot of, you know.
A lot of times it seems that way, that it's affecting your bucks more than your does, or maybe the older deer. And there's really no evidence that that's the case, that it, you know, that any of these deer are equally susceptible.
Right.
So, but I know it does seem that way, but.
It's more visible.
Yeah, the deer we see are more visible. But now, any of the deer are susceptible. Well, any of the deer that aren't genetically resistant to it or haven't survived it, you know, and have immunity to it.
Right, got it.
Yeah, are equally susceptible.
How about the heat, the high heat years where it's really hot, sticky, and muggy? Is that probably would affect it too, wouldn't it?
I didn't quite catch. Did you say heat?
Yeah, heat, humidity, muggy weather, that type of thing. Does that increase it, or?
Yeah, they're still learning a lot, and we're still learning a lot about this disease. You know, there's ongoing studies. You know, it kind of looks like maybe if you have a mild winter followed by, a drought or a hot summer, it may congregate these breeding areas for these midges, and it congregates deer around those areas, so it may make it worse in those years.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot we can't really say that for sure at this point.
Yeah, in general, I've heard, and I think you may have said it, if we get rain in the spring and then a dry summer, it dries up those water holes, and it makes those little tiny water holes like a hotbed for breeding those midges. Because they reproduce like a mosquito, right? They breed in water?
Basically, yeah. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a mosquito and reduce it down by about at 1/10, that's what you've got that's killing the deer.
Yeah, we can't say that for sure, but that's one of the hypotheses of why it gets worse. But it moves around, so, I mean, it's not like if you have 2 years of those conditions, both those years are going to have a heavy average.
Right.
It never happened that way.
Sorry, Tim, what did you say?
The midges you were talking about breeding like mosquitoes, they have the larvae to slump up down in the puddles, you know, in the water.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, that's how that happens. Yep. And they call them no-see-ums. I said earlier in the first hour, if you take a dime and see where it says United States of America, you can put one of those midges in the O. That's how small they are.
Yeah, they're very
small.
On a dime.
So, do they bite people and leave a whelp? Because we've got something up here that bites the crap out of you. You can't, you know, you would think the mosquito on you, but you can't see them, like you said.
They're sure going to bite any mammal, aren't they, Brian?
Yeah, as far as I know, and like I said, but you know, very fortunately, you know, it doesn't affect us.
Exactly.
Same way with the deer, you know, it doesn't affect us to consume a deer that has or had EHD.
I'm glad you said that. Hey, fellas, I got to take a first commercial break here. So, Tim, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Yes, sir.
Like
y'all have a good one.
You do the same, buddy. You do the same.
Let us know. Right,
yep.
Danny.
Yep. And that goes to anybody that finds deer. Call the local DNR office, wherever that is, and let them know. So, Hey, folks, do you have a beautiful fireplace in your home somewhere? You know, maybe just a brick fireplace, and it's sitting there. It's a hole in the wall. The heat's going up the chimney, and, you know, you go, what do I do with this? I don't want to cut wood. I don't want to haul wood. I don't want to start the thing. I don't want to worry about the flue. I don't like smoking. Hey, guess what? We fixed that right here in this house by a visit to Hearth America at Backyard Billy's on Kent Island, the premier fireplace stove and hearth dealer in the region. Robin and I selected an Enviro model EX35 gas fireplace insert. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's did the installation. They helped us find the mason that did the stonework up the wall and out the chimney. And they have provided us with friendly, knowledgeable follow-up and service. We both enjoy the convenience, the beauty, and the room-filling heat from our gas fireplace insert. I'm going to say this right here. We visited probably three or four different places before we settled on Backyard Billy's. They had it all. They had the service. They had the price. They had the knowledge. They had the courtesy to treat us like, you know, the consumers that we were. And they answered all our questions, and they provided everything we needed. So very happy about all that. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's carries both Enviro and Regency brands. You should act now before the fall rush, which is starting. You can select a new pellet, gas, electric, or wood stove from Hearth America at Backyard Billy's in Graysonville. Stop into the showroom soon so you'll be ready for the future cold weather. It'll be here sooner than you think. Visit oldbackyardbillies.com, the Hearth America Facebook page. Call 410-827-4500. That's 410-827-4500. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. Open 7 days a week. Route 50, exit 44B, Evans Avenue in Graysonville. If it's heat you want, Hearth America is the fireplace. So, let's talk about Clyde Sports Shop. You know, they are a full-line Browning dealer. And I want to tell you, waterfowl season is right around the corner. And I want to talk to you about a couple of different firearms, okay? The A5, the most reliable, fastest cycling, best balanced, and softest shooting recoil-operated autoloader on the planet. Comes in mossy oak shadow grass blade camo. It's got a fiber optic front sight to put you on target quickly. It's got the old humpback receiver, ergonomically balanced. It's recoil-operated. Kinematic drive that changes the shells. That's what it's called, a recoil-operated autoloader. And it has a 100,000-rounder five-year guarantee, the A5. Now, for those of you that don't want to step up to the A5 and you like the pump-action shotgun, Browning has reintroduced the BPS field model, the Browning pump shotgun. It's got a new look, a larger trigger guard. You know, if you're wearing gloves, you can get your glove in there too. It's got a matte blue finish barrel and a forged machine steel receiver. Here's the cool thing: bottom ejection. You're not flinging shells at your blind mate over there on your right hand side. You know, this has got bottom ejection, puts them right down the bottom of the blind. A satin walnut finish, a pump action, all with superior fit and new checkering surfaces. The synthetic stock models are available. That's the BPS Field. A couple other models are the Maxis shotgun, built for waterfowl hunting perfection, the Maxis from Browning, and the Gold Light 10-gauge. All from Browning, all at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. 242-6108. The website is clydesfishinggear.com. For firearms, licenses, ammunition, gunsmithing, and scope mounting, it's Clyde's Sports Shop. We'll be right back.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB-2722. MadonnaSeafood.com. Alan Ellis here for Linex Spray-On Truck Bed Liners. Linex Spray-On Truck Bed Liners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bed liners on the market. Whether you're a hunter, a crabber, angler, contractor, farmer, waterman, or weekend warrior, your Linex bed liner with a lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear, tree stands, tackle boxes, crab pots, or any kind of tools. Have your Linex bed liner installed at Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road. Call Bobby Hawkins at 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. Catonsville Linex is just off Security Boulevard on 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver, 410-455-0800, 455-0800. These Linex dealers can install tough truck gear accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. And ask about the Linex Fleet Services. Do what I did and have Linex install your spray-on truck bed liner and truck gear today. Linex.
Harry's Tire Service is located at the corner of Dover and Elliott Roads, just off Route 50 in Easton. That's where the locals get their tires and auto service work done. You have no idea how good these guys are. They are good. Featuring American-made Bridgestone and Firestone tires, as well as Michelin, Yokohama, and other brands, Spurrier's Tire Service has the tires for your car or your truck, any make or any model. Any tire for any machine in your backyard, from lawn tractors to garden tractors to lawn mowers and wheelbarrows. If they have tire repair, full-service automotive repair, including diagnosing any time your check engine light comes on, 24-hour truck service, and more, has kept Spurrier's customers, including me, and probably next week I'll get my set of tires on and get my noise checked out for sure. They've kept us satisfied for over 30 years. Stop by with no appointment needed for tires. Call Spurrier's Tire Service in Easton at 410-822-7384. Let me read that last line again. No appointment needed for tires. How do you like that? Visit their website, spurrierstire.com. If it's time to change your tires, give them a call, 410-822-7384, for Spurrier's Tire Service. Hey, Chesapeake Outdoors, located on Kent Island. The address is Route 50 East, exit 39B if you're coming from the road. It's Dominion Road in Kent Island, 1707 Main Street in Chester. Phone number there, 410-604-2500, 604-2500. Matthews bows, 10-point and Raven crossbows, Ruger, Browning, Remington, Savage firearms. You can order your straight wall cartridge rifle if you like, a 350 Legend, a 450 Bushmaster, 4570. They carry the Muzzy bow fishing packages. Great Christmas present, by the way. The LVX or the Vice Muzzy bow fishing packages. They do have the Rambo electric bikes in stock, Costa sunglasses, insulated mugs and tumblers for taking in the stand with you if you like, rods, reels, tackle, live bait, frozen bait, all that stuff. And they do have a couple things on sale. And that one of those things is the HUK, the Hook Clothing, 40% off. Home Defense Shotguns by Choppy and Escort, 10% off or more, starting at $279. The Raven 500 crossbows are on sale. The Cube Targets, 20% off, a certain brand of those. So check it all out. Give them a call, 410-604-2500. Chesapeake Outdoors on Kent Island, 410-604-2500. You'll be glad you did. We'll be right back.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. Battery Warehouse, convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Hey, if you know a lot about guns or not much but want to learn, Bel Air Gun Range provides a place to shoot, practice, and learn in a family-friendly environment. And you can make your selection from the showroom when you're ready to own a firearm. Now, at Bel Air Gun Range, the public indoor gun range is open 7 days a week with no membership fee required. Rental firearms are on hand. Bel Air Gun Range memberships are available to individuals, couples, and families on an annual basis. The gun range stocks handguns, rifles, and shotguns for shooting sports and competition, hunting, and home protection, ammunition, too. And Bel Air Gun Range buys, consigns, sells, and transfers new and used firearms. Bel Air Gun Range offers personal firearms classes with an NRA-certified instructor. HQL courses can be taken in a group or virtually from the convenience of your home. For more details about Bel Air Gun Range, services, sales, and classes, stop by 2137 North Fountain Green Road in Bel Air, Maryland, or visit the website belairgunrange.com. The phone number is 410-399-9518. That's 399-9518. Be safe, shoot, and have fun at Bel Air Gun Range.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
All right, we're back with Brian Eiler, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife, and Heritage Service. Brian, thank you for joining us again this morning, and we're talking about EHD. We had a good conversation with Tim. We learned a lot, and, you know, he's in Queenstown, which is one of the areas I hunt, and, you know, we are kind of worried about our deer herd in that area, and you, like you said, you had some reports, but you mentioned the lower shore. Let's talk about that a little bit, what's going on down there.
Yeah, so the lower shore seems to be the hot spot this year from the reports we're gathering. We started getting reports probably around August 5th, mid-August. I think it was August 19th maybe yeah. Was the first reports. We've had like 30 deer total reported to us, which it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, that's just a fraction, obviously,
sure.
Of what's probably down there.
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and Worcester, Wicomico are leading, some in Somerset as well.
Yep.
So those three counties seem to be the hot spot this year. We've gotten a couple reports out of Dorchester, but not too many this year. So yeah, we're watching it close. We've taken two deer from down there to the lab. We don't take every deer. You know, we
right.
just like to confirm it is, you know, that's what it is.
Right.
And we'll do that from a couple different areas and in the state. We, like I said, we work with Squidus, the disease lab out of University of Georgia.
Right.
And they've been tracking this disease for a long time. And there's different strains. You mentioned blue tongue earlier. So
yes.
there's actually blue tongue strains of this virus, and then there are EHD strains of this virus.
It's all, really?
You know, they all have the same symptoms, you know, and
right.
results. But yeah, so we typically try to get a couple to the lab so they can track these different strains and just see, you know, see what pattern is coming up there to try to learn more about this disease. But we've had EHD-6 has been the fairly common strain the last couple outbreaks. But then, we also get EHD-1, EHD-2, and then other parts of this. Of the country, they'll see actually blue tongue strain BT, you know, one or BT2,
which is out more western, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be that way, maybe.
So
lower shore is definitely where, you know, where we're getting most of the reports at, you know, this year. So there are other things, obviously, that can cause deer death. So, you know, if it's one deer near a road, you maybe don't have to report that to us.
Right.
But if you're finding deer in water, you know, or a half dozen deer, you know, or so, we would like to hear about that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the trail camera pictures I got were pretty sad. I mean, these deer are emaciated. Their ribs are showing that, you know,
yeah.
It's just, you know, they're on their last legs and it's not going to make it, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes that's, again, that's not always EHD, you know.
Right.
I mean, because, in fact, you know, EHD hits so hard so fast, you know, a lot of these deer are healthy and then they're dead within 48 hours.
Right.
So they don't have time to become emaciated. So,
right.
So a lot of these trail cam photos, if they're emaciated deer, might not be EHD. You know, it could be something, you know, something else going on. They might have been bumped by a car, or, you know, or have a brain abscess, or there's Mother Nature's not real nice sometimes.
No, you're right. Now that's interesting that you say brain abscess disease. I mean, there's a couple brain diseases. Brain abscess is that a virus or a bacteria? Brain abscess.
That's a bacteria.
That's a bacteria that comes from
bacteria
from the soil. Correct.
Yes. Yeah, it's, you know, again, that's another one where we don't completely understand it.
Kind of scratching your head on it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've had work, studies done in Maryland on that, because the upper shore, for brain abscesses, the upper shore tends to be kind of a hot spot for that in the country.
No, I think it's the epicenter of the country, to be honest with you.
But, you know, we haven't had very many reports or identified very many brain suspects here of late for the last couple years. But
then you've got circling disease. Tell us what that is.
Brain worm or circling disease. That's the worm that, you know, in most hosts it's fine, but in ceca deer, for instance, like the elk family in ceca deer, you know, it ends up in the brain. Damage, and, you know, a lot of times you'll run into a ceca deer that's out there just walking in circles. So, so that's brain worm. You have brain.
That's one of the few that affect our ceca deer here in Maryland, isn't it?
That's,
I mean,
correct.
EHD doesn't seem to affect the ceca deer.
To the best of our knowledge, no. You know, I've, way back before I worked for DNR, became the DNR, you know, I did my graduate work in Dorchester County on ceca deer and whitetail deer. So I had a bunch of both radio collared. We had an EHD outbreak like we're dealing with on the lower shore right now. And you know, it killed, I forget the percentage now, but it killed a significant percentage of my white collared whitetails. I think it was like 15% of them.
Wow.
Or maybe 20%.
But
never touched one of my ceca deer.
Amazing.
So, you know, all my ceca deer were fine that I had radio collared. And we've never, you know, in the 20 years that I've been with DNR, we've never had an EHD ceca deer. So
amazing.
Yeah, so they have an advantage for sure. Probably helps that they're a non-native, and it helps that they're in the elk family.
Right. So. But it doesn't help them with the circling disease.
Right. But we get very few reports of that. You know, I mean, that they get that from eating a snail. Is where it comes from.
Really?
So they typically don't, you know,
I learned something.
I can easily count on one hand the number of cases of circling disease we've had in ceca deer. I mean, it's very small. It's rare.
Even a whitetail that lives near the water can ingest a snail in their eating habits and wind up with it.
Well, it doesn't typically impact whitetail deer.
Okay.
It's more the elk family. If we're going to see it, we're going to see it in ceca deer.
So what would a white-tailed doe have that's walking in a circle in one direction?
Brain abscess, more than likely.
Brain abscess.
Yeah,
okay.
Brain abscess. Yeah, it's more prevalent in bucks because of the rubbing. The rubbing, the fighting.
I got it.
So it enters the brain through the sutures in the skull.
Right.
That being said, does can get it as well. And we have had does, a small number, but we have had does with it.
Yeah. The brain abscess thing in the upper shore, we talked about that earlier, a minute earlier. Deer get this sometimes from fighting, sometimes from rubbing, rubbing on trees.
Yeah. So, you know, the fighting part introduces an injury. Around the pedosaur or whatever.
Yep.
And then either deer to deer contact or then just rubbing or whatever, you know, that injury gives that bacteria a place to get through the skin.
Yep.
You know, the protective barrier, and then you have those sutures in your skull.
Sure.
And it can get through those sutures in the skull, and then
inflames the lining of the brain, which eventually turns into an abscess, which eventually kills the animal.
Yep. Correct.
No question. All right, cool. You're educating a lot of people here today, buddy. I'll tell you that. And tell us the effects of getting back to the original subject of EHD. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what happens when a deer gets bitten by a midge or a no-see-em. How does it get infected, and how does it spread, and how does it impact the deer's body?
Well, basically, it just causes. You know, for the fatal cases, it just causes severe internal hemorrhaging, breakdown of cellular linings, and the deer literally internally, you know, can just bleed to death. It causes organ failure. You know, it's not pleasant at all. It's a virus. these midges bite the deer, transmit it to the deer, and I can't, I'm not, you know, I can't speak to much more detail than
right.
Other than it just causes severe internal hemorrhaging, which is hence the name hemorrhagic disease.
Hemorrhagic disease, right.
Yeah, and there's different ones of these, you know, there's rabbit hemorrhagic disease, there's, you know, it affects all these different species. We're actually watching rabbit hemorrhagic disease now.
Really?
They're concerned about it, yeah, particularly in domestic rabbits.
Okay.
But we're actually watching rabbit hemorrhagic disease as well.
Well, it can hit cattle, too, I understand.
It can, yeah, it can hit cattle. It's often fatal in domestics, in cattle and all.
Right.
But it can, yeah, but it can, you know, cause illness and symptoms like that. And there is, you know, in our deer, some of our deer do survive.
Right.
This disease, and then some are also genetically resistant to it as well.
Right. Right. But, do we have BTV3 here in Maryland?
No. I don't think we've ever identified any BT strain in Maryland. I think it's always been EHD strains.
Okay. How about EHD6?
Yes. Six is the one typically that's been popping up here of late in Maryland.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I'd have to go back in our records, but I'm pretty sure in the past we've had one and two probably as well.
Right. So, okay. Yeah. Six is the one. We ran an article. I don't know if you know Josh Vance or not. Josh was from West Virginia and works for the department in West Virginia. Now I think he's with Fish and Wildlife. But he wrote an article that you guys contributed to last year about EHD, mostly concerning West Virginia. And they believe that some of these midges are swept north by hurricanes and storms that come up the coast or come up, you know, from the south and bring all types of this stuff with them.
Yeah, that's a theory as well. Yeah,
yeah.
That is a theory as well. And that would explain, you know, not so much for us, because we've had this disease since the 70s.
Right.
But every year you see it cropping further north, you know, into Pennsylvania, further into Pennsylvania, further into New York, you know,
New Jersey,
Ohio.
I'm here. Yep.
You know, so one of the theories is maybe these midges are being transported around by some of these storm winds. And maybe climate change has caused some of those wind patterns to change or whatever, you know, warming temperatures may be part of it as well. So that's causing some of this. But like I said, it's not an EHD is not a new phenomena for us. I mean, we've had it for, you know, 50 years now.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, there's still a lot to learn for sure.
I remember hearing about it not long after I moved to Maryland and you know, went into the radio show and that type of thing. And it had been around for a while then. And I remember, you know, people talking about, you know, deer floating in the Chester River, that there was an outbreak there in Kent County. And, you know, in my travels, I talked to hunters all over the state and shop owners all over the state. And a couple of years ago, Southern Maryland got hit hard.
Right.
Last year, Anne Arundel County got hit tremendously hard.
That was actually 2020. That was the same year. That was 2020.
2020? Okay.
Yeah, that was 2020. So last year was, yeah, and, you know, last year we, I don't even know if we had five cases total last year.
Right.
Statewide, you know, I mean, so it just, yeah. I guess
the effects showed up in Anne Arundel County when it was hit so hard that, you know,
yeah.
There was nobody seeing any deer. I mean, even properties that weren't hunted, like Smithsonian and a lot of farmland.
If I had to wager, and again, it's hard. This is hard for, I mean, we definitely can see hot years, but it's hard to know, to really figure out the magnitude other than looking at the harvest. But
right.
I would say the 2020 outbreak in Southern Maryland that basically went from St. Mary's up through Anne Arundel, I'm thinking that was probably a heavier outbreak than what we're dealing with right now in on the lower shore.
Right.
I mean, it was a pretty widespread area, and, you know, we had a lot of reports in 2020.
Right.
Of
which then affected the 2021 harvest. Yeah. The harvest was down, what, 17-18% last year overall?
Yeah, it was down a lot last year, but we can't blame it all on EHD, because all of the states around us were down as well.
Yeah.
It was an odd year last year. We're all of us are kind of really curious to see where, you know, what the next several years look like harvest-wise.
Cause right.
There's, you know, I think
I didn't
hunter
see...
effort was down last year.
I don't know.
I'm really curious to see. We don't have our hunter mail survey results back yet for
right.
for last year. But yeah, it was just a really odd year for not just us, but all, you know, all of the states around us, too.
Interesting. I think weather had a lot to do with that. I think the south wind that we had threw a lot of, you know, a lot of warning shots out there to the deer herd that there was somebody in the woods. More, you know, I believe
I don't
that,
know. Yeah.
I mean, I had south wind all year. It was like, I can't get away from it. Now, early this year, it's been all east, northeast, and, you know, in the Bozies. Now, they're killing a lot of deer. I mean, they're at least on social media, it looks like they're killing a lot of deer and some big giant bucks. If you're watching, you know, bucks, bears, stags, or any of the bucks sites, you know, that are out there and deer sites that are out there. And, you know, oh, my gosh, we have one up there now that I think grosses 180 inches from Cecil County.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice. I saw one from Caroline County the other day that was green scored at over 170, big typical 10 point with some kickers on, you know, and that's it. That's of interest to us because of bucks, bears, stags and the scoring that we do. So, anyway,
no, it was just,
I digress.
It was an odd year, you know,
no question.
I can't help but think that COVID played into it as well in some form or fashion. I'm not exactly sure how, but, you know, I mean, COVID has affected our workforce and everything else we've done, and I can't help but think, so human behavior-wise, I don't know, Like I said, it'll be real interesting to see how things shape up over the next several years.
Sure.
I'm curious to see. But
as you continue to talk about EHD and these other deer diseases, do you see people concerned about, you know, harvesting a deer and consuming it?
Not too much. I mean, we definitely get that question, but not too often. It's more the concerned sportsmen's worried about their deer herd.
You know, well, I mean, the deer, sure.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, and I'm right there with them.
Of course,
But I mean, the best thing I can say to that is that we've always bounced back. You know, I mean, back in 2017. We had an outbreak just north of where it is on the lower shore now. You know, Vienna, Preston, that area of Dorchester was hit hard. I mean, very hard.
Right.
And if you look at the harvest numbers for those management units, harvest management units in Dorchester, you know, the buck harvest dropped off, just say like 30%.
Right.
That
I remember
year
that.
Of the outbreak, and
then
the year after it was still down. But by the year after that, right back up to where it had been, you know, prior to the outbreak. So we've never had a case where it's had permanent impacts.
Right.
And we've never had an instance where we've had to intervene with any kind of like season change or bag limit change. You know,
right.
I mean, it just runs its course and it's Mother Nature doing Mother Nature things.
I understand sure.
So, then we just have to, it's disheartening, I know, especially if you have a herd you manage closely, but yeah, you know, it's just one of those things that comes through and you live with it.
Let's talk about the animals that can survive EHD and what you're going to see later in the season. If you've had this outbreak, it goes through, an animal's contracted this disease, it's survived, they can pass that trait, hopefully pass that trait on to the future generations that will have more resistance to it.
Right.
If that's a fact, you know, if it's not, let me know. But also, let's say we harvest an animal that's survived EHD. What are we going to see on that animal?
Well, it will typically be in poorer or maybe in poorer condition, so it may be somewhat emaciated.
Okay.
And then one of the telltale signs is the sloughing hooves, you know, or the hooves being all cracked and flaking off, and that's part of the process of surviving it. You know, it arrests hoof growth, and those hooves slough off, and then they'll start growing again once they survive and once they recover. So that's a telltale sign that it was
interesting
that he had EHD or blue.
Yeah, swollen faces.
Maybe. Not so much. It's mainly the sloughing hooves, and like I said, it may be a little poorer body condition.
Right.
We typically, you know, we visit processors every year. You know, we age and sex roughly 4,000 deer every during every muzzleloader and firearm season. And, and we look for sloughing hooves as a, as a way to, measure EHD.
Right.
And we typically don't see swollen faces.
More, we'll more so
sloughing hooves, but we'll, we won't see the other the other symptoms. So that's the main one to look for.
Do you think with the fact that it's been here for so long that we have more deer resistant to it?
We would have. I would certainly think so. Yeah. You know, I mean, we don't have the a large proportion of the population that's naive to it. You know, when you see these cases that make the news, like in northern Pennsylvania or New York, where it really hits the deer hard, it's because they they've never been exposed to it before. So they have a large part of the deer population that's, that's not resistant to it or that's naive to it.
And I got it.
So, yeah, so it has to help us to a certain degree, had that we've had this disease for 50 years for sure. Yeah.
Got it. Hey, that's a good place to stop right there. Let me get the last break in. It's going to be a short one, folks. We're going to, we'll come back with a closing statement, think about what you want to say and what you want to tell the hunters out there. Brian will be... coming right back to you after these commercial messages.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, buddy.
Yep.
Aaron?
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood. Year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB-2722. MadonnaSeafood.com. Alan Ellis here for Linex Spray-On Truck Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Truck Bedliners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bedliners on the market. Whether you're a hunter, crabber, angler, contractor, farmer, waterman, or weekend warrior, your Linex bedliner with a lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear. Tree stands, tackle boxes, crab pots, any kind of tool. Have your Linex bedliner installed at Catonsville Linex just off Security Boulevard, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver, 410-455-0800. That's 455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road in Glen Burnie. Call Bobby Hawkins. 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. These Linex dealers can install tough truck gear accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. And ask about the Linex fleet services. Do what I did and have Linex install your spray-on truck bedliner and truck gear today. Linex.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
We're about to roll out of here, folks, so I want to thank Brian Eiler for being with us here in the last little few minutes here. And, of course, our sponsors, we cut their commercials just a little bit short. Backyard Billies, don't forget them for any of your heating needs, for any of your stoves, or especially those gas fireplace inserts that we love, and they make backyards great. Barbecue grills, the whole deal. And then Clyde Sports Shop, full-line Browning dealer, CVA dealer, and everything you need for fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors at Clyde Sports Shop. So thanks to those sponsors as well. Brian.
Yeah.
We got a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've reviewed symptoms. We've reviewed the different strains. We've reviewed how animals catch EHD, or, how it's transmitted to them through these little no-see-em gnats, bugs, midges, whatever you want to call them, just like a mosquito. And we've talked to one hunter that is concerned about his herd in Queen Anne's County. You've mentioned that the biggest outbreak this year that you're hearing about is in the lower eastern shore. Anywhere else on the western shore that you've talked to any.
We've had just a couple, here and there, and
here and there.
Not
okay.
confirmed at this point, but
I got it.
Not any great numbers near water or in water or anything like that yet. So
okay, got it.
Over here so far.
Well, as we continue to get out there, and we're going to continue to see the carcasses. You know, the big bucks are the ones that people are focused on because they've got them on their trail cameras. They're not concerned about the smaller deer, but you contend that the smaller deer are getting it just as bad. And I'm guessing those deer get consumed quicker by nature, you know, by the predators
sure.
and by everything else, rather than
right.
the big bucks where you'll find a, you know, big set of antlers there with,
right.
you know. What about the spread that way? Any critters that consume deer after they're dead, are they affected by this?
No. Just deer.
Just the cervids. Got it.
Cervids, yeah. Just
and deer. And if you do kill one that you find his hooves are sloughing, eat the meat, yes or no?
Safe to eat, yeah.
Safe to eat.
Unless you see something that maybe, you know, a resulting secondary infection or something cause an issue. But no, as far as
right.
THC goes, not a threat to humans.
I leave that up to my butcher. I say, if you find anything, just, you know, do
right.
what you got to do and let me know. So, and I don't get upset about that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that can cause other factors. I mean, a broadhead lodged in a shoulder, or, you know, an old
right.
bullet wound, something that, you know.
Right. You just don't know.
You don't know.
But
so.
No, you know, and if you have, just real quick, you know, if you do have, if you're on the lower shore and you have EHD that hits you hard, you know, if you want to practice voluntary restraint and not harvest as many does this year, you know, it might help your herd recover a little quicker. But like I said, we've had this for 50 years, and in every instance, within 2 years, the population was back to where it was previously. So,
I'll go further on that. Let the little bucks walk and let them grow up.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's
yeah.
Kill one mature doe rather than a 4-point, and
right.
you know your herd will be better off. So practice
yeah.
a little bit of QDM out there.
Yeah, and just do that regard whether it's EHD or not. That's a good practice to have. You know,
no question,
so,
no question.
Yeah, you'll have a better balanced deer herd for sure if you let
yep.
these little bucks walk. And
yep,
our
buddy Butch just texted us from Baltimore County Game and Fish. Great information. So
thank you, Butch.
Yes, indeed. I want to thank you, Brian, for coming out today and taking your time here on an early Saturday morning. I don't know if you're getting in the woods later or not, but appreciate you joining.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's a nice day. I think you should.
Yeah, it was a nice morning.
Beautiful morning. Sorry I ruined it.
Oh, that's all right. I wasn't going to get up this morning anyway.
All right. Hey, thanks, Brian. We'll get your podcast up there on the Outdoors and Radio Show site ASAP.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks again.
For getting the word out. Yep.
You got it. Take care.
Take care. Yep.
See
bye.
You. Bye-bye. All right, folks. There's the music. Get out. Stay out. Observe your surroundings. But don't forget, you got a family at home. Hug your kids. Kiss your wife. Enjoy the outdoors. Enjoy your family more. We'll catch you next week.